Please join me in Deuteronomy chapter 15 as we continue our look at Moses' final address to the Israeli people. He is reviewing in a matter of hours everything that has transpired during the 40 years in the wilderness and all the rules and regulations that he has transmitted to them from God for how they're going to be living their lives in their new land. They're going to be heading in there in just a matter of weeks now. The last thing that we were talking about is how the tithing program was supposed to work to the benefit of the Levitical people. The Jewish people were living on a system of 6 years of work, followed by a seventh year of rest. In years 1, 2, and 4, and 5 of that cycle of work, they were to take their tithe, their randomized 10% of increase, to the centralized worship location. They would use a small portion of that tithe to celebrate Feast of Tabernacles. They, their families, their neighbors, including all the Levites and priests that live in their general vicinity, back in their home areas. The remainder of the tithe after Feast of Tabernacles is over with automatically goes to the Levites. It's stored in the centralized warehouses or storehouses that are right there at the centralized worship site. And the Levites and priests live out of it. But in years 3 and 6 of the cycle, you still have Feast of Tabernacles at the main worship site, but the tithe automatically gets stored up in local storehouses scattered throughout the Israeli territory in all the different tribal regions. And those storehouses are used to keep the Levites and the priests and people who have fallen on hard times supplied. And so that's a very good system, I think, for keeping everyone taken care of in the Jewish society. Now, chapter 15 goes to the whole seven-year cycle program, what I refer to as the sabbatical year, the sabbatical year cycle. So chapter 15, verse 1 says, "At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release." Now, we learned about this way back when Moses first was given this information. 6 years of work. The seventh year, in connection with the seventh month, the month that Feast of Tabernacles takes place in, that seventh year kicks off with a release of all indebtedness, all personal indebtedness. Verse number 2, "This is the manner of the release. Every creditor shall release what he has lent to his neighbor." So all of the loans that have been made during the 6 years of the work cycle, they all zero out when the seventh year begins. "He shall not exact it of his neighbor, his brother, because he who is his release has been proclaimed." If I remember correctly, it's right around the 10th day of the month, Yom Kippur, that it kicks in and all debts are zeroed out. Now, verse 3 tells us there is an exception based on whether you are a member of the covenant or not. Verse 3, "Of a foreigner you may exact it, but whatever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release." So those who are not Israeli ethnically and, I guess more to the point, those who are not Israelis by faith, they don't get to participate in the release of debt. So a Gentile can still be required to pay the debt into the future after the seventh year rolls around. Now, if they've converted to Judaism, if they've converted to the true faith, that makes them Israeli. And so it applies that the debt is released. Now, they can't play the games. I know some of you are like, oh, well, why can't they just declare themselves Israeli right before that seventh year, get out of the debt, and then go back to being Gentiles as soon as the debt is zeroed out? No, you can't game the system like that. Well, I guess you could try, but the judges would say, no, you were not truly converted if you went back into your Gentile religion after the year of release was done. Verse number four. This is the purpose of zeroing out the debt. But there will be no poor among you. Now, that's not a statement of reality, a statement of fact, as in there'll never be any poor people. In fact, we'll hear the opposite in a little bit. It's saying you're not to allow there to be any of these really poor people among you. I mean, when people fall on hard times, you're supposed to jump in and help them. That's the point of what Moses is saying here. There, and I'm going to read it that way, there are to be no poor among you, for he who is will bless you in the land that he who is your God is giving you for an inheritance to possess. If only you will strictly obey the voice of he who is your God, being careful to do all this commandment that I command you today. For he who is your God will bless you as he promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And you shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you. So the ideal is, if you, my students, Israelis, this is Moses talking, if you will just live by this covenant, then you'll get the blessings of God, not the curses. And so you won't have any poor people because everybody will be blessed. And you, in fact, will be the ones that will lend money to Gentiles, not the other way around. You will be the ones that are living in leadership over Gentiles, not the other way around. Verse 7 brings up the conditionality of this, though. If among you one of your brothers should become poor. So apparently the covenant is not being lived up to universally. And so there are problems in the economy. And we know this became the norm throughout Israeli history. And that's why there were Israelis that fell on hard times. So if this happens in any of your towns within your land that he who is your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother. So you're not to just ignore them when they fall on hard times. But you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. So the responsibility of each Israeli citizen, according to Moses' directions here, is to watch out for their neighbors. Watch out for their relatives. If they fall on hard times, you need to step in and help them out of your blessings, out of your provisions from God. And then don't be of that mindset that you want to get this money back. Verse number 9, take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart. And you say, the seventh year, the year of release is near. And your eye looks grudgingly on your poor brother, and you give him nothing. So Moses anticipates, and I think correctly, that some greedy people, when they have a relative or a neighbor fall on hard times, and they actually have the wherewithal that they could help them out, they look at the calendar and they go, ah, no, the seventh year starts in a couple of years, and if I lend this guy enough to get himself out of trouble, it's going to take him 3 or 4 years to pay me back. No, I'd be losing money. I am not helping them out. Don't be that way, Moses says. Because if you are that way, if you show that sort of cold-hearted greediness, then this is what's going to happen. He will cry to he who is against you, and you will be guilty of sin. Greediness is a sin. Cold-heartedness towards somebody that needs your help and you have the wherewithal to help them is a sin. Verse 10 says, you shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him, because for this he who is your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. Now, I always have to make this caveat when we come here. It is not helpful to hand cash to someone who is wasting it with sinful activities. That is not helping them. And this passage is about actually helping them. It would be better to oversee the person's use of resources given by you to make sure that they're getting out of the hole appropriately than to just let them keep digging the hole deeper. This is one of the reasons why I'm a strong advocate when a church gives any type of support or assistance to someone, whether they're in the congregation or outside of the congregation, that they need to make it clear that this is conditional on you getting assistance on getting away from whatever caused this issue. Sometimes we will give to people the first time without conditions, but the second time it's, no, now you have to let somebody help you with your finances. Someone has to look over your books and figure out what's going on here, because this is repeating too often. It is better, I think, also, if you're running across, especially a stranger that's asking money, to take them somewhere and help them get a meal or buy some clothes or find that job that they say that they're looking for. Than to just simply throw money at them and potentially either be scammed or for them to continue digging the hole that they have started down. Because the goal, remember, is to help the person out. That's the goal. And so that's the context here of this passage. Don't be cold-hearted, but don't let the resources of the Lord be wasted at the same time. I think that comes from other passages. Now, it's interesting. Verse number 11 says something that we just talked about earlier. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. That's the practical reality. Because the Israeli people did not live according to the standards of the covenant, they did not end up with the widespread blessings that God was wanting to give them. And because they didn't end up with that, they ended up with having perpetual poverty within their community. You might remember that when Jesus was being anointed by Mary of Bethany, just a few days before he went to the cross, that Judas Iscariot and some of the other apostles griped that about a year's worth of wages had been dumped on Jesus in the form of that anointing ointment, and that it should have been sold and given to the poor. John the Apostle, in his gospel story of this, John chapter 12, he's writing it 30 years later. He says, Judas didn't say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was lifting money out of the purse, the common purse that he was carrying. And so John definitely takes Judas to task over that. But in that story, Jesus got after the apostles for getting after Mary and said, leave her alone, let her keep it. What she did, she was doing it for my burial. The poor you will always have with you, but not me. And so that seems to be an allusion by Jesus back to this passage here, that we will always have impoverished people. And our goal should be to try to help them out. Verse 11 continues, therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in your land. So again, I encourage you, when you come across situations where people are in need, and it's genuine, and you have the wherewithal to help them, make sure you take the steps to ensure that you give them genuine help. Don't slap a Band-Aid on a wound where the person is bleeding out. This is metaphor, understand. You take the steps necessary to help them fix the problem. Don't just slap a Band-Aid on it. Verse number 12. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you. Now, this is a reference to indebtedness slavery that we've talked about being kind of the norm of biblical history. So one of the things that Moses had told the Israeli people from God is if one of your fellow Israelis, perhaps they're a relative that's close, but they might just simply be an Israeli that you know about. If they fall on hard times with Gentiles and end up owing Gentiles a whole bunch of cash, then you should step in and buy their indebtedness contract if you've got the cash, if you've got the wherewithal. So this is a reference to that. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you, so you've bought their indebtedness contract, he or she shall serve you 6 years, and in the seventh year, you shall let him go free from you. Now, this is a reference to the cycle. It's not just any random six-year period. It is the six-year work cycle followed by the sabbatical year of rest. It was triggered or begun when they first planted in the Promised Land. That became the beginning of the first year of the cycle. And so the thing that's being brought out here is when you buy the indebtedness contract of one of your fellow Israelis, be aware of the sabbatical cycle with the year of release that's coming up. Now, what happens when the year of release happens? Verse 13. When you let him go free from you, meaning his debt is now zeroed out, doesn't matter if he worked for you 6 months or all 6 years of the cycle. No matter what he owed, still, when the sabbatical year began, that debt is zeroed out. It is totally released. But you also have, as an Israeli, an additional responsibility. When you let him go free from you, you shall not let him go empty-handed. See, don't say, well, here's the sabbatical year. You don't owe me money anymore. Bye. Have a nice life. And you leave him out, you know, in the cold, or let him just wander off without a thing. That's not going to help him out. So God says, you make sure he has something to start over with again. Verse 14, you shall furnish him liberally. That means freely out of your flock, out of your threshing floor, out of your winepress. You give him supplies. As he who is your God has blessed you, you shall give to him. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and he who is your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this today. So it's another one of those things, do unto others as you would have them do to you. If you are coming off of a really hard time, and your debt is now zeroed out, but you don't have a thing to your name, wouldn't you want someone to give you some starter material, some seed stock, something where you can start fresh with a little bit of something to work with? Of course you would. And so that's what's being encouraged here. And I think that's good principle. Verse 16, but if he says to you, I will not go out from you, because he loves you in your household, since he is well off with you. So let's imagine, because I think that's what the context indicates, that he's been with you several years. You know, the potential was for 6 years. Let's suppose you were with him the full 6 years as his indebted slave. And you now really feel a strong affinity toward this master, toward this person that bought your indebtedness. You think of him perhaps as a father figure, and you love him. You feel that he cares about you. And so you might say this, verse 16, he says to you, I will not go out from you because he loves you and your household since he is well off with you. Then you shall take an awl, which is just a hand drill, a hand-powered drill, and put it through his ear into the door. Now, in another passage, we know that the door in mind here is at the worship site, the tabernacle. And so this was a ceremony that took place in the sight of God and witnessed by the priests. And so it's really a ceremony for putting a special earring in place that will mark this person as a volunteer slave to this former slave owner. Now remember, when we talk about slaves in the biblical context, it's always someone that had an indebtedness contract. He shall be your slave forever, meaning that it doesn't matter about the sabbatical cycle anymore. He is what in some other societies referred to as a freedman. The former slave owner is the patron, and the former slave is the client. And so they have an enduring relationship that is completely voluntary. To the female slave, you shall do the same. It shall not seem hard to you when you let him go free from you, for at half the cost of a hired worker, he served you 6 years. Now that helps us understand a little bit more of the system. Because these guys are indebted slaves, it's an indebtedness contract, they are paid room and board as part of their contract obligation, but they work for half the price of a normal worker. They do get paid, but they get paid very little beyond their room and board. And this is one of the reasons why slaves were able to purchase their own freedom over time, is because not only were they working the indebtedness contract off, they were also being able to squirrel away some of their small amount of payment that they could then use to purchase their freedom with. But the point that Moses is making here is you got yourself a half-priced worker by buying up this indebtedness contract. So you shouldn't think yourself ill-used by letting them go at the end of the contract period, at the end of the 6 years, because you really got a good deal out of this. Plus, you got the relationship. You saved their life for all practical purposes by buying up their indebtedness contract, and you've developed a relationship with them. In fact, in some cases, the person wants to stick around permanently. In the New Testament, this seems to be what is behind the use of the word bondslave that Paul and others like to use in reference to themselves and their relationship to Jesus. So they're effectively saying, I am no longer a slave to sin. I am a volunteer slave to Jesus Christ. He bought up my indebtedness contract, and I am now binding myself to him for eternity because he loved me and gave himself up for me. And I just love that word picture, that metaphorical visualization of our relationship to Jesus Christ. Well, we end this section with this. So he who is your God will bless you in all that you do. So if you look out for other people, then God will look out for you. And we know this is a principle that continues into the New Testament period. Well, we'll mark our place right there, and we'll get back together next time we have opportunity to get into the Word.